Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 245 featuring Art Cyan, who is a really cool guy and I have known for a long time. Sean is joining me today because our good friend Kristen is out in Paris.
Making croissants.
Making croissants. Hanging out at the Champs-Élysées.
Sure.
Sure. So he's not going to be, he didn't get a chance to preview this podcast. But I will tell you this, I really, really, really like Art. I've known him from, you know, early parts of his career and have seen him grow in such amazing ways. He's extraordinarily talented. He's talented. He is currently at Blur and doing some amazing work over there. But I would actually call him the king of the long shots. He's the one guy who I know who can take an incredibly long and complicated shot and break it down and figure out all the tools you need to do it. He did an amazing job on an extremely complicated shot on Oblivion, which I was worked with him on. But he also did, you know, similar things on Tomorrowland. Did you see Tomorrowland?
I did see Tomorrowland.
Yeah. Do you remember that really long shot in Tomorrowland where she's like going through the subway in and out, and it was like a continuous take?
Yeah.
That's an art shot. So
that's like one of the most
memorable
shots of the movie. I mean, yeah. Right. You know, I mean, they showed that in all the trailers and every kind of everything that they showed about that movie.
Yeah, it's really cool. And the logistics of planning for a shot like that is extremely complicated. And Art did an incredible job. So really cool to have him on. Now, let's move on to events. Mm. You can get all our stuff at chaosgroup.com/events. What are some of the events coming up, Sean?
Looks like we have a Chaos Group meetup in Vancouver.
Yep.
On November 4th.
Mm-hmm. Alon will be there. Mm-hmm. He'll be showcasing Lavina and other things. We just got a brand new laptop with an RTX card in there, so it's going to be really cool to see that. Mm-hmm. And then what else is going on?
3D Basecamp in, you're going to make me say it, Eindhoven, Netherlands on December 12th and the 13th.
Yes, I'm going to make you say Eindhoven. So for all of you SketchUp users out there who are interested in learning more about V-Ray for SketchUp and all that stuff there, we will be at Basecamp. Now, we do have a call for speakers for Total Chaos 2020. Where can people get that information?
They can get that on chaosgroup.com/become-a-speaker.
All one word.
All one word. Become a speaker.
Yes. So if you are interested in becoming a speaker, or you know someone who you'd like to recommend as a speaker for Total Chaos 2020, which is going to be happening 2020.
Sooner than you think.
Sooner than you think, yes. Let us know, and we'd love to hear those recommendations.
It's a good time. Come on down.
Come on down to Sophia.
Come on down to Sophia. It's a good time. I have my
all. All right, so where can people follow us, Sean?
Ooh, I know this. They can follow our Facebook page at facebook.com/CG Garage Podcast.
Yes, and all of our podcasts can be seen at chaosgroup.com/CG Garage. We've been actually doing these things now. We've shortening, so we've removed the dashes and stuff just so I can say it on the podcast without having to say the word dash.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's great. So I really appreciate them. I was like, that makes sense. Because when I used to say chaosgroup.com/CG-garage, it was confusing.
But if with I just say writing dash.
I just don't like saying the word dash.
Is that a recent change?
Yeah. I've been working with Simeon on it, and it's been great. Good. It's like, thank you. Then he gets it. Now, if you say it out loud, you realize, like, when you say the word dash, it sounds odd.
But
we're making our links more auditory friendly. It's about time. So if anyone has any recommendations or things or ideas that they want to hear on the podcast themselves, they can reach us at
labs@chaosgroup.com.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Sean. Hopefully you will enjoy this great podcast with Art Cyan.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
I didn't have any breakfast this morning at all.
Why didn't you have breakfast?
I've been fasting.
You're fasting?
Yeah.
That's why you look like you're in such good shape, my friend.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, a little inconsistently, but I've been fasting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been good. How about you?
I have not been fasting.
You don't need to.
I don't. Nah, I guess not. But yeah. I've never thought of you as someone overweight. But you look like you've definitely been working out too, though.
Well, it's more so. You wouldn't believe it. The science behind it is insane. Basically, you feel a lot better when you're on an empty stomach. When you're into like 12 hours of no food, you're a lot more alert and sharp.
Interesting.
Yeah. In particular for men, right. Apparently it has to do with testosterone and everything like that. It keeps you like really sharp, like, Oh, I'm going into hunger mode, survivor mode, right? So I need to be prepared for whatever. And yeah, so you're a lot more to be ready alert. To hunt. Yeah. So, you know, when you have like a carb coma, Well, you're not as witty and quick and smart. You know what I mean? You're just like, what? Huh?
Right.
You know? So this is the opposite of a carb coma.
Interesting. Fasting alertness.
Yeah. It's really, really impressive.
All right. So we already talked about the fact that you're currently working at Blur.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a 15-minute fast walk over here from Blur, so it's not that far.
It's right? Fasting as well.
Fasting as well, but a different kind of fasting in the same way as adulting, right?
Yes, exactly.
But then you said you're like having all this like, you know, weird memories from the past because of the old Sway building, which is right near here, right?
Yeah.
So I worked at Sway, and then you worked at Sway shortly after that. Mm-hmm. And I guess that was how, you know, that's the first time that I remember, like, where I, like, when someone told me, oh, because you and I worked at DD, that was the first time someone was like, oh, yeah, Art, he worked at Sway.
Right.
And so immediately I was like, oh, if he worked at Sway, I already know that was a level of quality at a certain point, right?
Gotcha.
And that, honestly, that's all you had to say to me.
Yeah. Like, at the time, the work that came out of Sway was a step ahead of, I feel like, a lot of the other studios that were doing car commercials and whatnot. I think a direct competitor
was DD.
To Sway. Well,
DD Cars.
DD, which did, you know, amazing work.
Yeah.
But also Speed Shape, I think.
No. Because I worked at Speed Shape. Honestly, I think that Sway did superior work to Speed Shape at the time.
I agree. I'm trying to stay humble about it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Sway was really cool. A very, very good, you know, concept. Well, it was led by Mark, right? So Mark Laser had an eye that could just bring things to sing, right?
Yeah.
And so when you have that level of oversight, it was a big deal.
Right, yeah.
It was a big deal.
It was a powerhouse.
So how did – but that wasn't your first thing. Like, how did you start getting into CG? What's your origin story?
Oh, well, it's an interesting one. I actually always wanted to be an architect as a kid. Yeah.
Okay. Just like me. All
right. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, well, you know, architectural school is expensive and whatnot. I was like, well, let me just see what I can do, you know, on a smaller scale. So at the time, there was a lot of, I don't know if you remember, there were a lot of ITT Tech commercials.
Oh, right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I remember like seeing it. I was like, well, you know, I should go check it out. And I went to their facility in Sylmar.
Okay.
Sylmar, California.
Yep.
And they gave me a little bit of a tour.
But they weren't giving you, it wasn't architecture school. It was like,
no, it was drafting.
Right, yes.
It was drafting, right. Which to me, I was like, well, this is a nice thing to start off of. You know, I admittedly didn't look into it too much.
Right.
I was just like, I just want to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went there, they were giving us the tour, walking down the hallways, and there's like student artwork, you know, along the walls and cool sketches and everything. And I remember seeing like this kind of like a robot,
okay.
A 3D character. And I honestly didn't know much about 3D, anything like that. I just remember doing an Apple in AutoCAD in high school, you know. And so I didn't know much about it, but I was like, hey, is this something, you know, part of the program that I'll be learning as well?
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And they're like, no, that's part of the multimedia program. I was like, well, what does that entail? They're like, website, 3D animation, flash animation,
right.
Some graphic design, just like a mix of everything. I was like, huh. I was like, give me a second, yeah? Mm-hmm. I can't remember what went through my mind, but I remember thinking about it for 1 minute. I was like, I want to do that.
Right.
So,
but it was architecture, because architecture was something that's like, oh, well, I can relate to that.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right. But then you're like, oh, but it led me to discover something
different. Yeah, this thing looked awesome. And I was like, okay. So I basically shifted gears, my career path right then and there.
Right.
But when I did graduate, I went to a kind of like an arc firm, architectural viz place in Pasadena. It was called J. Bullock and Associates.
Okay. This is around what year?
This is like, I want to say 2005.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably like 2005.
Right.
So, you know, I went there and really super nervous. It was my first job interview.
Right.
They made us do a test. I don't know. There were like maybe five other people at the time. We were all doing like these, you know, modeling tests, and they didn't tell us what to do. And sure. It was just like, hey, let's see you make a wall, this house, facade, whatever.
Right.
So we did, and then I got hired, and then I they were using Brazil at the time for rendering in 3D Max, and there was no GI, but I have been like messing around with V-Ray.
Right.
So I was like, hey, guys, have you ever heard of global illumination?
Right.
And they're like, what's that, you know?
Brazil had global illumination.
It did, but they weren't utilizing it.
Interesting.
And it did, and it was not good.
Right.
Right. So V-Ray was a lot faster, nicer looking, straight out of the box.
Right.
So I did a little bit of R&D for them like 6 months into the job, and then I kind of became like a project manager there.
Oh.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I got the whole studio to get V-Ray licenses.
Nice.
So we just shifted gears from there. I stuck around there for about 2.5 years, then got an opportunity to go to Digital Domain, and that was like my first actual visual effects gig.
So straight from the ArcViz, you went to DD.
Yeah.
Doing what?
The project was the Tron pitch, which...
The Tron pitch,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
Right.
Which was 3D Studio Max,
yep,
and V-Ray.
Yep.
And it was 3D Max and V-Ray because of Kaczynski, the director.
Yes. Yes,
because he came from that background, right?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
He did. And actually, when he first did his Desert House project, it was actually Max and Mental Ray, because Brazil wasn't
right.
around, or V-Ray wasn't around.
Yeah.
But then he really liked V-Ray.
The ray tracing capabilities
because it was actually, I think it was Rob Niederhorst who was convincing him when we were at Speed Shape to do stuff. I think they did the Blackbird project.
Yeah.
That was all about
great.
Like V-Ray and everything else. And so when they went to DD, it was the same thing. So I guess you were with Aaron Powell and Greg Tzatzilis.
Yeah. Nick D'Amico.
Yeah.
Todd something, who was the comp soup, I think.
So then how did you get that? I want to hear how that happened, how you went from the architect viz firm in Pasadena to working on a Tron pitch at Digital Domain. That's a big jump.
That is a big jump. And it just boils down to sheer luck.
Okay. That happens.
Yeah. And it totally happened for me. And that was a game changer for me. Basically, I was working with this guy named Rob Valdivia at the ArcViz place.
Yep.
And he left our studio, went to like one or two other places, and somehow he got into Digital Domain.
Okay.
And their commercials department, right? And their commercials department at the time was just like all over the place. A different supervisor was using a different pipeline, a different software, you know.
Sometimes they're using LightWave, sometimes using RenderMan.
Maya, it was all over the place. And, you know, the redheaded bastard child was the Max team over there. And it was quite unpopular.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but it was,
you
know. Is a big change, you know, people don't like change,
I guess.
Yeah, so he worked there with Aaron Powell, and then he was leaving there to go, Rob, mm-hmm. he was leaving DD to go to, you know, do video game stuff, and he called me up, and he said, hey, are you interested in working at Digital Domain? I was like, excuse me, come again?
Right.
You know, I was like, did I hear you right? And he's like, yeah. I was like, oh my God, are you serious? Yeah. And I was like, I'm terrified right now, you know, because I had been wanting to get into visual effects. And honestly,
but you saw a different road. You didn't see a jump like that.
I didn't see a jump. And I'm not going to lie. you know, doing the ArcVis for 2.5 years, I really wanted to do something else, which was, you know, visual effects.
Right.
But it just wasn't happening.
Right.
You know, I was doing personal projects and everything. I was applying left and right. And I wasn't getting anything out of it. So then out of nowhere, you know, this kind of falls on my lap.
Yep.
And, you know, relationships are super important in this industry.
I was going to bring that up because, I mean, there's a couple things. One is you do have the talent. Obviously, we know you have the talent, but it's really hard to go in with like a resume and say and a demo. You can do a demo reel and all that stuff, but somehow like some guy calling up and saying, "Yeah, I know a guy. He can do this job." Is actually way more valuable. So keeping those relationships is very important.
Absolutely. I think that is definitely one of the things that has brought me to where I am today.
Yeah.
And took me to, you know, other places is through relationships.
Sure.
You can have the talent, but then you need the exposure, you know, in a sea of other talented artists.
Right.
And sometimes it just, you know, boils down to who you know.
Yeah.
And I got lucky. So I went, I took that job, and I guess they hired me because there was the interior room with you know, Lebowski in there meditating.
Right, you did Finn's condo.
exactly his flat. So I did that. I modeled that, and you know, the shading and stuff and lighting, and that was the part that got me into DD, was knowing GI and how to do interior lighting to make it look photoreal.
Right.
You know, and I'll say things have come a long way these days from when we were doing it.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's how I got my foot in the door.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. So you were at DD, and that was a huge breakthrough, obviously, for you to get in there and to do that stuff. The work is amazing. So again, your talent is not in question. It's just like, wow, what an opportunity, right?
Right.
And that's great. So I'm assuming that that's what led you back to Sway.
Yeah, through Aaron Powell, at Digital Domain on the Tron pitch was my CG supervisor. And, you know, after that project, I went back to ArcVis for like 2 months, and then Aaron Powell called me. And he was like, "Hey, I got this opportunity for you. Do you want to go, you know, come work with me? I'm going to another studio."
Right.
And I was like, "Oh, that's super cool." And at the time, I had gotten another contact reach out to me who was at Frantic Films.
Okay,
You know, which got bought out by, what is it, Prime Focus?
Prime Focus, yeah.
Yeah. So I was like juggling between those two, and I was like, but wait, car commercials, this looks super cool, you know?
Right.
Like, and I remember working at the ArcVis place in Pasadena thinking, man, I wish I could work on these projects one day. And I was like looking at different CG stuff, and then I find out this is Sway Studio.
Right.
Right. So I'm like, yet another thing. I don't know if at that point it falls on my lap, but you know.
No, so that's really cool. I mean, obviously, you must have joined Sway. I mean, it must have been like months, like not maybe even weeks after I left, because I had left. You said it was 2008. Yeah, it was probably around then. But yeah, it's car commercials is a big thing. Like, I really knew, like, I learned a lot about doing car commercials.
Yeah.
I know language of car commercials now that I never thought I would never
know. The lingo. Yeah.
You know, finding the bone of the car and doing all of this different things and headlight reflections and, you know, what a DRL is, a daytime running light is.
Right.
You know, all those terms that you learn from doing that stuff. And it was fun, actually. Honestly speaking, I think the heyday of car commercials, they were really fun and interesting. And Sway was the place to go. Like, if you like the niche studio that did that kind of work was really cool.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Well, I mean, you guys set up the foundation. So when I went there, a lot of the, you know, hard work was done.
Right.
You know, we were using the shader library that you guys set up, you know.
A lot of that was done by Daniel Buck, actually.
Daniel Buck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Daniel Buck. Yeah. You guys left quite a legacy there.
Right.
And we just kept going with it.
Yeah. So yeah, it was a cool place. It was a cool place. Then somehow we finally figured out how to get you back at DD. So did you go from Sway back to DD, or was there a little bit of something happening
between? Yeah. I was at Sway for a total of 2.5 years, and at some point down the middle, I was CG souping there. And I just got kind of tired of car commercials, you know, the same thing. And then
after a while, it's like, it's really cool. And then after a while, it's like, it's the same thing.
Exactly. Yeah. It's exactly what happened to me with ArcViz, you know, mauling houses 24/7 and then you get tired of it. And I always had like a niche for something new, something different, something better. And Alex Thiessen was a producer at Sway.
Yes.
And
really good guy.
Super good guy.
Yeah.
He was also...
I didn't know him at Sway, but I knew him at DD.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he left Sway as an EP at the time. He was an EP at Sway.
Right.
Then he went to produce at DD on X-Men First Class.
Oh, right. Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
So with Nikos and Jay.
Yep.
Yep.
The Jay and Nikos show.
The Jay and Nikos show. Yep.
Uh-huh. Great guys.
Yep.
Yeah. So then they reached out to me. They were like, hey, we need a, you know, just a lighter, generic lighter, this, that. And at the time, you know, they were using Maya V-Ray.
Right.
And I didn't know Maya whatsoever at all. And I can say this now, but I kind of lied about knowing Maya.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in
there.
A lot
of people do.
Yeah. I got the job. And from there, it was like super, you know, sink or swim. Again, it was like going back to my first time at DD where I was like, I had to take a deep breath before walking through the doors every day,
right.
You know? But then after like 2 weeks of picking up Maya, and then it was all good from there, Maya V-Ray. V-Ray was an awesome stepping stone to help me learn Maya.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, I think people need to realize, like, you don't have, I don't know, like it took you 2 weeks to pick up Maya. To do, especially if you're doing lighting, right? Because lighting, you're really focused. There's what you're doing in one package is just like, okay, what's the equivalent of this in this package?
You know?
It's not like it's a big jump
to
make those steps.
No, and that was super helpful about it because I remember trying to learn Maya on my own time while working, and it just was not happening.
Right, right.
You know,
but if you're like in it, you learn much quicker.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so you were working on X-Men First Class.
Yeah.
What were you doing on that show?
I did some lighting, a couple of shots, a little bit of look devs, you know, shaders here and there, some odd stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know, as any feature film, a big chunk of the lighting is done by the lead.
Uh-huh.
So the foundation is there, and, you know, I'm not going to say it's simple to swiveling the lights around and whatnot.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're juggling big scenes, heavy scenes and whatnot.
Right.
It was a fun experience. So I think after that, what did I do? I think I stayed at DD.
You were still at DD.
Yeah. Was it Ronin, 47 Ronin?
You're probably on 47 Ronin. I was on that.
And that was the first time I met you officially. Yeah,
well, officially, right.
Right?
So we were both from 47 Ronin.
Yeah.
And then I knew, yes, and I guess I knew you from Thiessen, right? So So Alex Thiessen was on that. Yep.
Yeah.
And he basically introduced me to you
and
working with you. And that was cool. That is, you know, there's a couple of movies that I've worked on that I've never seen. That was one of them.
I saw it. You're not missing out. Okay. I'll tell you that.
Okay. And not to say that it was a bad movie or anything. It was just not no interest in it. But there was a big complex city stuff that had to be done. And we had to figure out the city and how to render it and all of that stuff.
It was set up pretty nicely.
It was. I worked really hard on trying to figure out. It was the first time we were trying to bake lighting out of V-Ray.
Right, I forgot
about
that.
And we were doing that. Who is it? Who I forgot who was.
Tadao.
Was it? Tadao? Yeah, it was Tadao.
Yeah.
Tadao was helping with the baking pipeline, and that was cool. It was a pretty cool project. And then let's see, what did we do after that? Eventually, you and I ended up working on Oblivion.
Right. Yes.
And so that was an interesting thing for me because I had worked with you on 47 Ronin and I'd seen the work you've done. Did you work on – you didn't work on Real Steel, no?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
No.
Right.
It was kind of tandem, right?
It was at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, they pulled – yeah. So I was on we were going on Oblivion – and the thing that was interesting about that was that Lisa Beru at the time was trying. We were supposed to have a team in Vancouver and a team in LA.
Yeah.
Because of the tax credit situation. But we couldn't, because we were so busy in Vancouver, because we were doing so many projects, we couldn't actually get a team in Vancouver because there was enough people or enough, she couldn't find the staff to do it.
Yeah.
So she told me, how lean can you get here in LA to do the same work? I'm asking you to do all of it instead of, you know, 30% or whatever. If you do all of it, you want the smallest team you can get to make it happen here. And so I said, all right, but I get to pick whoever I want, and it doesn't matter how expensive or whatever they are. And he goes, yeah, absolutely. I just want a body count, right?
Yeah.
And so I did that. It's like, I say, all right, well, I'm going to handpick every person and make like, these are going to be my, like, my, you know, commandos in the army,
yeah,
right?
In the field.
In the field. Like, it's, I don't want to have to babysit someone or give them anything. It's like, these are people that can do it all, right?
Yeah.
Like,
it's
like, here's your shot, you're done, right? And we did it a very small lighting team. And I picked you as one of the people on the team because I really saw what we were doing. And I really liked the fact that you had a generalist look to you.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I'll figure it out. Right.
Yeah.
Right. And you were one of those, I'll figure it out kind of people, not in a cocky way.
Right.
It's just like, there's a lot of people who are much more, at the time, there's a lot of people who are very seasoned visual effects people. It's like, not my problem. That's an animation problem.
That is the cocky way right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. It's like, that's a modeling problem. So kick that back to modeling. I'm going to sit back here and, you know, read the news while that gets fixed. And that's like, that's not how we're going to work. If we're going to do this, you know, lean and mean, I need a Daniel Buck, I need an Art Cyan, and I need a Tim Nassauer, you know, those kind of people, right?
Yeah.
Like people who just like get their hands dirty. And I remember that. It was a big deal to do that. It was also risky, by the way, because if one of you got sick, I'm down like pretty hardcore.
Yeah, because you're replacing what, like 15 lighters down to what, like 5 or 6?
Yes.
You know, and you're going from 30% of the, you know, workload to 100%.
Right, and then having you guys involved.
That. Losing one guy is like losing 5 guys. In that scenario.
So that was your second foray into a Joe film, right?
Yeah, actually it was.
Yeah.
And it was the coolest thing ever that I've yet to have worked on.
Really?
Yeah.
It was a really cool show.
And Tim Nassauer was great sitting next to him.
Mm-hmm.
I learned so much from that guy.
Yeah.
Super talented, great eye. Just everybody on that crew was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really great because we all sat kind of next to each other and we sort of helped each other, you know, deal with certain things. The other thing that was extremely important, and this is mainly due to Eric Barba and Joe, is like there was no compromise on quality.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it had to be like every frame had to look like, you know, a photography magazine, you know,
and I feel like it ended up being
that way. Right. There was no compromise on quality.
There's like a cult following,
right?
You know, when I go to different studios and people find out, you know, I worked on Oblivion, they're all just like, they'll huddle around me like, oh my God, you got to do the bubble ship, you know, the drones, this, the that.
It wasn't that complicated.
It wasn't. It just looked fantastic.
It just had to look really good.
Yeah.
There was not like, oh, it's some groundbreaking thing. It's like,
no.
Just like take the quality level and just turn it up to 11.
11. Yep. Yep. And sometimes it felt like 12.
Yes. Sometimes it felt like 12. Yeah.
Yeah. That was fun.
Yeah. So one of my favorite stories, and I still tell this story because it was so important to me. And it's interesting and ironic considering what we just said about you, you know, trying to figure things out, right?
Uh-huh.
You were working on a really crappy shot. It was a really hard shot that wasn't really thought out very well, right?
Yeah.
And it was, I believe, it involved having to project a matte painting on it or whatever it was. And you and I are like, we can't work on this unless we fill out everything else. But they kept saying, well, we want to see the latest on this shot.
Yeah.
And I directed you. I was like, I'll tell you what, why don't you just render it the way it is just so people see the state of the situation so we can fix these problems.
Right.
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 And I directed you to do that because I was your lighting soup at the time.
Yeah.
And you did. And it looked shitty. which I knew, and that was the whole point. Right?
Yeah, to show them.
To show them, like, hey, you know, you want this to look better. We got to fix all these problems, and art can't do that. Like, you know, that was the thing, right?
Right.
But I didn't communicate that very well. So I think actually Eric, and he'll admit this. He'll say it. It's like Eric blamed you for the situation because the shot came up, you know, on his dailies, and he's like. Yeah. Art Cyan's latest work on this shot, and it looks like crap. And so he's like, I don't think Art's going to cut it. He's like, he was really like, nah, Art's not very good. And I had to make a hard choice. It's like, you know what? Based, you know, I went to bat for all these guys, and I said, this is my team. This is my commando. This is my platoon, right?
Yeah, you put this together.
I was like, I'm gonna go to bat. And I basically told him, I was like, nope, it's not, Art is not the issue. Art's a really good guy, and you know, here's a situation. That shot got fixed, by the way. It looks fine. It looks great.
Was it the bridge one?
Wasn't the bridge. It was something when the doors opened, and there was like a matte painting on the side.
Oh, the vestibule.
The vestibule, yes.
Yeah, that thing.
Yeah. Because you had to kind of project a matte painting onto something, and it wasn't really...
Something wasn't right, yeah.
The matte painting wasn't looking right, and that's nothing to do with your lighting. It's a matte painting, right?
Right.
So anyway, and it wasn't textured or whatever. There was a bunch of problems.
Yeah, there was a lot going on.
So anyway...
Set up for failure, but not really set up, you know.
Right, yeah. So then after that conversation happened, then there was the big shot that was coming up.
The Beast.
The Beast, which is a extremely complicated single take, all CG shot of one of the drones flying through this cavernous space, shooting and blowing everything away.
Yeah.
And it was a monster shot.
Yeah.
And it was pre-vised, right? And animated.
Mm-hmm.
But there still was a lot of stuff that needed to get done to it.
Yeah.
More modeling to be done. A lot of stuff going on. And then Eric said, have you figured out who's going to do that shot yet, right?
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure he was positive I was going to give it to Daniel Buck.
Yeah.
Right? Which would be a choice.
Ideal.
That makes sense.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. But Daniel was pretty busy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm going to give it to Art. Art has his architecture background. He's got all this different stuff going on. He knows he's done car commercials, so he can make that drone look beautiful, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to do that, right? And so he looked at me and goes, Art, because he still had this thing. It's like,
he remembered
Art. You mean Art, the guy who did the crappy shot? And I was like, remember what I told you? And, and I said, nope, Art's going to do it.
Yeah.
Art's going to do it. And he goes, all right, Chris, I trust you. Which he did reluctantly, he did. Because he knew but he also knew, like, this shot is going to take a long time.
Right.
And I said, all right, you know, I'm going to give you a really big shot, and you're going to be on this for a long time.
Yeah, was it like 4 months, I think?
4 months you worked on that shot,
yeah.
Right?
It was like a lot of it was done on the side, juggling a lot of other difficult shots at the time.
Yeah.
But like, I think you'll say this too, it went pretty smoothly, right?
So tell us about like the teams. Like we set you up with a small support team. Like we had, what's her name who was modeling? We had a modeler that was helping.
She was also texturing, right? No. Oh, no. Claire was modeling.
Claire was modeling.
Yeah.
And we had a texture artist who was really good. Another woman who she was really good.
Yeah, her name I don't remember.
Right. And then who was the comper? Kurt.
Kurt Williams.
Lawson.
Lawson, yes.
Right.
Man, I'm bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kurt Lawson.
And by the way, I think he's been on the podcast before too. And he said that comp had over 350 read notes.
It was a lot. It wasn't just from me. I think I handed off maybe like 80-something read nodes.
Right.
I think the rest of them came from effects. There were a whole lot of effects elements in there. On top of that, he did a lot of practical effects on his end too.
Yeah.
You know, like
there's a couple of
the
fire
footage
effects,
and he placed it in the, you know, Nuke's 3D system. But 417 frames, I think. I'll never forget that number.
Really?
Yeah.
417 frames, and it's still on the demo reel. Yeah. DD's demo reel.
Yeah. It was a blast to work on. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think there was ever a point on it where I was frustrated with it, other than that one time I came and grabbed you. I was like, Chris, I need your help on this. And it was the, you know, the reflections on the ground and the water puddles and everything like that.
Oh, and you were having a noise problem or something.
This is something like that. Yeah. But I remember we like sat down together and maybe spent like a day on it and pushed through that, and it was back to smooth sailing from there.
But what I really appreciated, Art, about it is the fact that I gave you this monster shot, and you worked on it for like 3 or 4 months, whatever it was.
Yeah.
You only really came up to me once with a problem.
Right. Yeah.
You basically figured it all out yourself. You did everything like you when there was a... You work with the coordinator, but you sat down with the modeling team or the modeling person and the texture person, and you're like, all right, here's all the things I need, and you guys work together. You work with the compositor. I had no idea how this thing was actually getting done.
I was like, Chris has enough to worry about.
But that was amazing that you did that all by yourself.
I think that's where the generalist aspect comes in, you know. I think that... after some point, like, Digital Domain realized, hey, man, these generalists are pretty badass, you know?
Yeah.
We need to maybe rethink how we're utilizing them on a feature film side of things. Because, you know, generalists are, they're all over the place as far as commercials go and whatnot. Sure. But feature films, like you said, is very structured, and you do this and you stick to that.
Yeah.
And then something's wrong.
It's a katana pipeline.
Yeah, exactly.
Know? But if something's wrong, I'll fix it, as opposed to sending a shotgun report to fix it, right?
As long as it doesn't bust the pipeline.
Right.
Yeah. You know, you're going to save a lot of time by fixing something yourself that you know more about. Sometimes, honestly, you're just spending so much more time trying to explain what's wrong with it to other people, when you could have done that in a fraction of the time.
Right.
You know, on your own. I think a lot of that mentality was used throughout my stay at DD.
Yeah.
I feel like it gave me a leg up, you know?
Yeah.
In terms of a lot of the other talented lighting artists that were there.
Yeah. Well, it definitely showed. And I remember when we were reviewing the shots, you know, because it was, how many frames do you say it was?
417.
417 frames. We would review it, but, you know, because it was such a long shot and it was a lot of renderings, right? You had to render 80 passes.
I think light selects weren't around at the time. I can't remember.
No, they weren't.
I think that's why, right? We wanted to, you know, drive the intensity, flicker the lights and everything.
Right.
And we were like, this is way too long for us to, like, nail down the frequencies in the render. What if you want to change it? You know? You're screwed.
Right.
So we took more of, like, a comp building approach. And I think one of the things that also happened was, due to the render times, we decided not to use GI.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, by we, I mean
dark,
me.
Though. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I don't think anybody
knew.
Damn,
why didn't you tell me this?
So
don't tell Eric Barba. It's too late. It's already in.
Well, it's already out there. But like you wouldn't have known, right?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't. I can see how you can get away with it.
Yeah, that's where some of that architectural background came in.
Right.
You know, a lot of fall-off lights and whatnot. But it was also because it was dark and there was so much, there were so many explosions going off and, you know, rays being fired from these weapons that illuminate light. And I remember seeing it and I was like, oh my God, this has an opportunity to throw so much color at the screen because of, you know, the different tracers and everything, the explosions. I was like, well, this is what should be illuminating the scene more than anything, other than those very, very faint, you know, top lights from the fluorescents and the tubes and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. But we would review it, and also in order to see how things were going, to see the progress being made. We told you, because it was 417 frames, we basically always like render it at noisy quality, right? So you render noisy versions of it just to see it, like if all the pieces were going to work,
if it'll
right?
work.
Because you didn't know otherwise. So you did noisy versions of it. And it was interesting because normally VFX supervisor is not going to show that to the director, right?
Yeah.
But he knew that Joe
understood
that, yeah. Right? And then Joe was like, this is a monster shot. It was a very expensive shot, by the way. That's why he worked on it for 4 months. But Joe is like, I want to see the progress on this shot. And Eric said, okay. And so we did that low quality version. And I think Joe saw it and he knew it's like, it's a noisy version just to get it out because we have to get it out in a day because otherwise it's going to take a long time to render.
Yeah.
And so he looked at it and he goes, looking good, keep going.
Yeah.
And that was the only comment.
Right. I think he saw it a total of like, as far as rendering goes, a total of three times, and the third time was when he finaled it.
He finaled it on the third time.
That was the only time he saw it completed, actually. Yeah. Was on the day that he finaled it.
Now the render times to get it all done. I think you were sitting there looking at the render jobs for week.
It was terrifying. I was having nightmares.
It was literally a week of you just looking at the jobs like, yep, that pass is done. Okay, yeah. That pass is done. And it was just rendering.
Yeah, and I was getting calls from, the render wranglers like, you better make sure this is going to work because, you're sucking up a lot of juice here.
Yep. But it got done and it was finaled right on the on the first time that everything was final render quality, that it rendered right then and there.
Yeah.
It finaled right then and there, which is great. Really fantastic.
It was fun.
Yeah.
And I always tell you this, but I've been super grateful you gave me that opportunity. That shot on my reel is just, it opened so many doors.
Yeah.
It did so much for me.
Yeah, I think that shot might have gotten you to ILM.
It did.
Right.
It did. Yeah. It totally did. And also you did too, right?
I did because, I didn't. No, the shot did and your work did. But what happened is, Johan, was that his name?
Johan,
Yeah, Johan called me.
Right.
And he goes, I got this, this guy named Art Cyan? Because I think I was a reference on your resume or something.
Oh, okay.
Something like that. And he says, did he do this shot, Big Oblivion? He's like, absolutely. And he's like, what did he do? He's like, I said, he did a lot.
Yeah.
And I described it because you know.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
And he comes from the generalist point of view where he thinks like someone should do everything. But then it was like, yeah, this person worked on a shot, but he worked on one flash pass.
He did
pass.
A box over here right, or he something. Did a box.
So I said, no, Art really. And he's like, okay. And so he asked specifically about that shot. And I think that shot was a reassurance that you could do something really big on your own. So,
yeah.
Where did you work on an ILM when you went
Tomorrowland.
There? Oh.
Disney's Tomorrowland.
Another big architecture piece.
Yeah. That thing was so fun to work on creatively. It was different. It was a lot more different as far as the assets go, these huge tower buildings, which were, that's what you see when you look at the cityscape is the ones that pop out or the high rises.
Right.
And each one was very unique. And there was an art department going along with it. And they would give us a rough sketch. And then each one of us environment modelers would have to kind of, go off of that. And the difficult part was that you'd spend 3-4 days modeling a building and then they'd look at it and they're like, okay, now let's try this. And then it's not like a concept illustration where you could turn it around so fast. You have to model and model and model, I think that was the challenging part. And you had Sonia, right? On your podcast, Sonia Christoph.
She sat next to you.
She was, right there.
She was on, it was funny because she said, I know Art, he sat next to me.
Yeah, she was on that too.
Yeah.
That's how I met her on Tomorrowland.
Nice.
It was a fun experience.
Now, didn't you do another monster shot on Tomorrowland?
A couple, actually. I think I had one shot that was a minute long.
A minute long.
Yeah, it was two shots connected.
That's 1,400 frames.
They were very establishing shots.
Okay.
If you remember that sequence, it's more like a tour through.
Is it the one where she's going in and out of the train?
Yep.
That's a monster shot.
Yeah. Yeah, that one actually, I won a lighting award for that one.
Really?
Internally, one of their departments in ILM will give out awards after a show, best this, best that. And I think I got best shot and best lighting for it.
Wow.
That was super cool too, man.
Yeah. That's a monster shot.
I feel like I was fortunate. You know.
Do you think that shot? I mean, you must have felt pretty. Because if someone gave me a shot like that, I'd be like, I don't know if I can do this. But obviously, you had some experience from the Oblivion one that you were able to do it, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of staying on top of a lot of things.
Sure.
So much going on. And again, I wasn't just working on that shot. I had a bunch of other big shots going on as well. So that was a little difficult, I'll admit. But, you know, the organization skills is something that I feel like a lot of artists need to know about, is that like it plays a big role in how productive you can be.
Sure.
And I needed that. I needed to stay on top of things. I had a whole lot of stacks of notebooks next to me, you know, writing everything down.
Right.
Because I just can't rely on memory.
You're right.
You know, it will fall apart.
Yeah. Do you think that that's something that people need to pay more attention
Absolutely. To? Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
Because honestly speaking, like once you took on that Oblivion shot, I was like, it's in art's hands. I have no idea what's going on.
There's just too much information.
There's too much information.
Yeah.
So which is, by the way, is a great position to be in as a supervisor, is if you cannot micromanage, because I could have easily micromanaged that stuff from you.
Yeah.
And it would not have been as successful, I don't think.
Whether it would have or would not have been, we don't know, but we know that it probably would have been more difficult to pull off.
Right. Because we're sitting here arguing about
running out of time. Right. Yeah. Running against the clock and, you know, explaining something and you can explain something to me.
Right.
I think what was good about it was, you know, the creative input I got from you. That's, I think some supervisors need to acknowledge that they need to take a, you know, step back and not micromanage. You're chewing away from the artist's soul when you're doing that.
Right.
You know, you're also maybe complicating things, even though you think you're simplifying it through, you know, communication.
Right.
I think sometimes what a supervisor can do is just, you know, take a look at the general direction it's going and give a lot of guidance and kind of, you know, keep your eyes on the prize sort of thing and make sure things don't drift off too far off.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I thought, you know, I remember hearing that you worked on that big shot on Tomorrowland, which was amazing because it's so many things going on in that shot.
Yeah.
It's a big monster shot.
Yeah, it was.
And it's the period in the movie which is the most fun, right?
Uh-huh.
It feels the most Disneyland.
Exactly. Exactly. That and I don't know, my favorite part was when they're in the house and they're shooting around all these like retro, you know, sci-fi, 60s sci-fi looking weapons and everything.
Yeah.
So much color and just madness going around. Yeah, very Disney.
Yeah, very Disney. So you were on you're on Tomorrowland. How long did you work at ILM for?
I was there for that project, which was like 11 months for me.
Okay.
And you know, they wanted me to stick around, but I, you know, this was in San Francisco and you know, rent was crazy expensive.
Yeah.
And I kind of missed the tacos in LA.
Right.
You know, I missed LA really is what it boiled down to. So I was like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to, you know, try and renew my contract here. They're like, yeah, we'll make you staff this, that. I was like, yeah, you know, I'm good. I'm going to go back to LA.
Okay.
This was a fun experience. You know,
I'm good. Okay, I'm glad you did it though.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
I mean, you can't say I worked at ILM is a pretty good thing, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Again, yet you know, something else on the resume that, you know, makes you more appealing.
Right.
Which, you know, I just want to say this one thing is there are a lot of people that will work at these big studios and they'll have to work on their reels. And then, you know, when you're like trying to hire some artists and you see their work, you're like, oh, this is great. They tell you what they did. And then they come down, you know, and work with you. And you're like, oh, so disappointing.
Right.
You know? And which is to say, just because the name of a studio is on your resume doesn't mean that's going to take you where you want to be.
Although I said at the beginning of the podcast that I knew you worked at Sway and that was good enough for
me. That was a good one.
Well, you know, I said that because, okay, ILM is way bigger than Sway.
Right.
Right? So ILM, there can be a lot of people that slip through the cracks.
Right,
whatever they're doing. At Sway, there's no room for that.
Right.
Right? So I was like, yeah.
That's true. You're right.
So I don't know. Different feeling. And I have, you know, honestly speaking, I have worked with a lot of people that had ILM on their demo. Not a lot of people. But I've worked with a few people that had ILM on their resume.
Mm-hmm.
Not so good.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And it was just like, And then the worst part is they not only were they not so good, but they were just like, but I worked at ILM.
Right.
It's like, ugh.
Yeah.
Now, it does also look with some amazing people at ILM, right? Mm-hmm. So that's all
good. Oh, my God. There was so much talent there.
Yeah.
In that, because I worked in the Digimat department, which is basically your 3D Max V-Ray generalist.
It's the generalist. Department. I think they call it generalist now.
Yeah. They used to call it Digimat.
Digimat.
Now they call it generalist.
Right.
It's a fad. Everybody's hopping on it.
You well, know? Generalist used to be a bad word. It's right? not anymore.
Yeah. This guy was just generally good. You know?
Yeah.
You could do this, a little bit of that, a little bit. There, no particular expertise.
Knows a little everything, but not an expert.
Jack of
everything.
All trades, but master of none.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. But there's so much talented artists there. Yeah, that was a fun experience
That's
as well.
That's been cool. So you decided to come back to LA?
I came back to LA. I went back to Encore Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
Where we did episodics, TV work.
Mm-hmm. Also a very generalist-friendly
super,
group. Yeah.
Super generalist-driven and very fast-paced.
Yeah.
You know, prior to going there, a lot, you know, I've heard from a lot of people when you work in TV, it's like first pass is final pass.
Right. Yeah.
You know? So the bar is up there, but realistically, you don't really reach the bar most of the time, unfortunately,
right.
because of time constraints.
Right.
There just isn't enough time.
Sure.
Usually it's like a 3-week turnaround from play to delivery.
Right.
You know, and a lot of shots. So I was there for a bit. I souped there a little bit also. And that's where I did that big city, you know,
with
the team of artists.
For Flash, right?
It was for Supergirl.
Supergirl. And Supergirl were
Flash,
running.
Supergirl. Yeah. Same studio. So, you know, use that city throughout. But yeah, I had some help there as well.
Sure.
A couple of guys modeling and texturing and, you know, troubleshooting some stuff, but it ended up being pretty, pretty epic in terms of, both the scale of the scene. Literally, it was like 10 miles by 10 miles in max, you know, with the help of like Forest Pack and VRA proxies and you know, all the stuff. And the best thing about it was the GI that came out of it. We actually did full-on GI, you know, for these night shots where your street lamps are illuminating the scene, bouncing back up, you know, raking across these buildings.
And it's interesting. I remember that shot specifically because I think you put it up on your ArtStation page, right?
Yeah.
Right. So you guys should check out Art's ArtStation page. There's a lot of cool stuff that he put up on there. But there was when I was looking at that, I was like, oh my God, so many light sources. Yeah,
like something like 20,000.
20,000, right?
Physical lights.
Which is, technically speaking, a massive problem in ray tracing.
Yes.
Right? As you, I'm sure you experienced.
Yeah.
But we have new features in V-Ray right now that we had been developing when you put up that page that could have actually solved all those problems.
Yeah.
Like our new adaptive lights?
Yeah.
Where you pretty much can add, 50,000, 100,000, a million lights, and it will render just as fast as 6 lights, right?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, and I was like, we got to get this scene and test it on this scene, and they're like, it belongs to, you know, Warner Brothers.
Right, yeah. There's a little bit of that.
Yeah.
But
it would have been a perfect test scene for that.
I can tell you, man, that that would have been perfect.
Right.
But even still, with the render times we got and the quality out of it, V-Ray was superb.
Awesome.
So I can only imagine it being way more superb.
Yeah. There was another feature that we did when I started at Chaos Group about 6 years ago. Do you remember, what's his name? Bill Spradlin.
Yeah.
Was working on Oblivion, and he did all the close-up eye shots of the drones.
Yeah.
And because of the refraction and all the super complex stuff that was going on in terms of the ray tracing, there was a sampling problem that ended up making those render times extremely slow. There were like 20 hours a frame or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah.
Well, right now in the version V-Ray, after I started, it's like, oh, here's a feature that would have pretty much solved that problem. It probably would have done 20 minutes a frame.
Yeah. It's gotten so much faster.
Yeah.
I can't even.
Yeah.
It's way faster.
Okay, cool. So then Encore for a while, you did some stuff on Supergirl.
Yeah, did that. I did a little bit of VFX supervising, associate.
Oh,
to
really?
Armin Kevorkian. He was the VFX supervisor. And yeah, I got to go on set for Supergirl for a couple of episodes.
Nice.
A lot of late nights and, you know, double duty and still managing the studio, you know, staying on top of assets and everything and juggling like three scripts at once. It was pretty overwhelming.
Yeah.
So that's where I was like, you know what?
Episodic is hard, dude.
Yeah, it was tough. It was very tough. And I was like, I think I need to take a step back because that is where I wanted to be was, you know, most artists, they aspire to be like, hey, VFX supervisor.
Right, right.
That's it, right? And that's where I was headed. But then I realized, you know, I have zero life. My health is deteriorating. I'm not getting any sleep. So I kind of backed away from that. And a buddy of mine who was at Blur at some point, who was also at Encore CG Souping, Chad Wanstreet, he got me in contact with Blur, Monica from Blur. Yeah. And so I came over to Blur.
Yeah.
Worked there for a while. And I've been here. I mean, I took a little break from Blur, went somewhere else, went back to DD, worked on some stuff, and then I came back to Blur. And I love it here.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Blur is like a perfect fit for you, I think.
Yeah, and because it's very generalist. Like me. Yeah.
Very generalist driven and very high quality driven.
Yeah, and the projects are super fun to work on.
Right.
Big variety. The talent there is just insane. Like, people keep me on my toes there.
Yeah.
Even the new guys that come in, the younger guys, I'm like, oh, man, damn it, another software I got to learn now.
Yeah.
You know?
it's
incredible to be surrounded by.
Did you work on Love, Death, and Robots?
Yeah, I did. I did, yeah.
What did you do on that?
I worked on all three of them.
Really?
Yeah, one of them was called Shapeshifters, which was the werewolf one. I did just a small little environment I modeled in there, and then I did... there was a shot where he goes up the hill into the bunker and he's looking for his friend. It's super dark. And then there's like flashing warm lights going on and dead bodies just everywhere.
Right.
So that was another long shot.
Yeah.
I can't remember how many frames.
Yeah. But
by the way, I love working on long shots.
Apparently you do. We should call you Mr. Longshot.
Oh, but that's, yeah. But yeah, I got to work on that. I did the one that everybody calls Space Cowboys, which was, you know, very toonish looking.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we got to do that one. That was really fun creatively. And Sunny's Edge was super fun.
Oh, you worked on Sunny's Edge too.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I did that intro and, actually the look was, requested by the director was like, hey, match what, Fincher had done in... Can't remember
Girl with a Dragon Tattoo.
No. It was a Facebook Zodiac guy.
Social Network.
Yeah. Right. There's like the scene is a lot of, you know, warm lighting and and whatnot. So that was pretty cool to work on.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, that's cool, Art. So now that you know, you've been at Blur for a little bit now, I think you found you seem very comfortable and relaxed.
Oh, I love it here.
You love it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah?
You're healthy. You're fasting.
Yep.
You know, you're not. I know that's something that you want to make sure that was going on, and your hours are more manageable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So where do you see yourself now? Where do you see, you know, what you want to do? Is this kind of like a good spot for you right now, and that's where you want to be?
You know, I'm just enjoying it right now.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy with where I'm at right now. But
that's great.
You know, I can see myself doing more lead stuff, I suppose. And, you know, I don't know. I really want to enjoy this.
Good.
It's fun. It's really cool to not stress over, you know, things falling apart because it's out of your control.
Right.
You know, it's nice to stress over things falling apart because it's your fault. I'm okay with that. Plus the creative aspect of it. You know, when you're more hands off in the supervisor role, you don't get to do the artwork as much.
Right.
Which is, let's be honest, that's why we're all artists. We love what we do.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's why I'm really happy with what I'm doing right now.
Well, I think that's an important thing that you basically described already is like, you know, being a generalist is okay.
Yeah.
But, especially if you're going to do a big long shot like you've been doing, you have this history of doing these, it's, you've got to manage yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you got to manage yourself. You got to take notes. If you're going to do everything yourself, and yes, fine, you can solve all your problems on your own, but you have to keep track of everything. And if you're going to be writing out 80 read notes, you better make sure, that you know what that is.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of organization. So it's pretty cool.
That's definitely one thing that's overlooked by artists, you know, especially younger artists, is
organizing.
Yeah. Some of us are OCD-ish. I know I am, you know.
Yeah. I remember your notebook you had, and you were like writing everything down. I'm like, it's all code to me, but I'm sure it makes sense to Art, and I trust him because every day I see it coming together.
Yeah.
And I'm like, keep going, you know. That's a really good thing that I think people should realize. It's like, keep organized, do all those things. Because there is, you know, out of a renderer, there's a ton of passes that you can write out, right?
There's also the courtesy aspect of it as a lighter. Yeah. You need to be a little considerate of who you're handing that stuff off to.
Right.
You know, because then they have to deal with that. And if you don't present it in a you know, understanding kind of manner, your work is going to end up not looking good.
Right.
So you have to kind of manage that aspect of it as well.
Right.
The communication side of it, to communicate with your compositor.
Sure.
You know, otherwise all the hard work you just put in, you're not just going to dump it in an email and be like, well, this is yours.
Right.
You better, you know, make it look good.
Right.
Communication is definitely key.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think it's really important that people look at that and see how they communicate what they're doing and work with your team. And it was also the other way around, right? Because it wasn't just you handing off something to the compositor. It was also you communicating your own needs to the texture and modeling team as well, right? So even if you're, you know, like in that case in Blavin, for example, you weren't actually modeling the stuff. You were dealing with a modeler. But they were doing it very specifically for that shot. So you guys had to work together as a team, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Really good stuff. And you were basically that bridge. You were the bridge between the, you know, where everything's in 3D and then everything turns to 2D, right? So like you're that bridge between those two worlds right there.
Yeah, and you know, I was fortunate that the bridge didn't collapse on either end.
Right. Yeah, no, it was really cool. Well, that's really cool, Art. I really appreciate you taking time. Believe it or not, we're just about an hour, which is awesome.
Wow, that flew by.
It flew by, right?
Yeah.
I think it's a really cool story. I've always championed your work. I've always thought you've done really amazing work when, you know, I realized like, you know, Art's in a blur. We should just have him over and we can talk about these stories. I think it's a really cool story to tell your story and to talk about the stuff that you've done. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. I was really excited when you reached out to me.
Well, good. I'm really glad we did that too.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Art. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Chris.